For a long time now, I've been telling you that actions taken by Ukraine, actions taken by Europe, and even actions taken by the United States have a counteraction in the Russian side. And when all this talk over and over about war and expanding war and preparations for war by 2030 will have a reaction on the Russian side. We seem to ignore that and think that, no, that'll never happen. The Russian side will stay static, but the Ukraine side, from European support, now from increasing American support, Rubio saying we've taken a side, and what Zelensky is doing himself with his own development and with help from the West is striking deeper into Russia. The tables are turning, all this. I keep saying there is a reaction from this. It's not neutral. It's not in a vacuum. And now we're starting to see what could well be that reaction we've been looking for, and it may not be good for our side. Now, remember here, just a couple of days ago, Volodymyr Zelensky seems to be trying to expand the war, not just trying to continue to fight Russia harder, but physically expand it. He has recently struck in an Iranian ship, and there's evidence that that was not at all by mistake or accident. And he's also considering North Korea his enemy. Here he actually is in an interview just a couple of days ago where he said exactly that.
If Iran, from the first year of the war, gave new page, new technology to Russia, it was Shahid drones. They gave thousands of these drones first year of the war. Then they gave licenses. What did they do? Did they attack us? I think yes. So they already did it. But we have to be honest. Iranians and North Koreans already attacked us.
So his intent should be just nakedly transparent. He is trying to, he has been trying for the whole time, all the time of this war, he's been trying to draw the West in, not just in the support with technology, tanks, airplanes, ammunition, training, and targeting data, et cetera. He's had that. He wants actual combat troops on the ground. So he has been doing everything he can, I think, with a lot of these strikes into Russia to prompt a very strong retaliation by the Russian side against Ukraine to finally say, look, this is against us. And especially since Russia has been talking about it, about maybe striking into Europe, in some of the places where factories are done, where the drones that are given to Ukraine, where the long-range missiles are developed that are given to Ukraine, et cetera, or other kinds of military aid is manufactured. Russia has been talking about that. Zelensky seems to be doing everything he can to prompt that so that he can get an Article 5 and then all of NATO will come in behind him. Now he's seeing a new opportunity and he's saying, hey, how about, because America's fighting this Iran war, how about we connect those two and strike an Iranian target and then pull everybody together, pull the U.S. in, and once the U.S. is in, everybody's in. That seems to be his intent. And now, of course, there's reports that up to 30,000 North Korean soldiers are going to come and help the Russian side. And so he's saying, look, that's the second time North Korean soldiers have been in. Now he's saying, this is a global strike, and so I need all the other armies to come in and fight right here on the front line. Now, that's fine for him. I don't ding him for that. I'll just be honest. If that was me, if that was my country and I was in that situation and I knew I could never defeat a bigger enemy that has millions more men from which to draw, tens of millions of more people that they could draw into this war, I would be doing the same thing. So I don't necessarily blame him for that. Although I guess I do blame him because it can't be won and he has condemned his country to destruction because we're not going to come in and do that. But that's still what he's trying to get done. And if he can get some kind of a catalyzing event that he thinks maybe he can still get it even in this late hour. But as I have been warning for a long time, expect some kind of Russian reaction. We may now starting to be seeing the outlines of that from Vladimir Putin himself. And in the past couple of days, he has made a couple of different speeches, one in front of the Duma, and then another one at an event where there was some veterans of the special military operations, the war against Ukraine, where he's been making statements. And you look at them all together and you see a picture emerging, which could imply a significant change coming in just a matter of months from now. Let's first, start off because he kind of sets the stage to the Russian audience, both the ones in the stadium and then those in the setting, and then also for the Russian people to see this later. He's going to say, listen, we're fighting this war not because we attacked on February 24th, 2022, but because NATO started decades earlier.
They promised us back in the day to Mikhail Gorbachev that they would not expand NATO one expansion after another, despite our numerous protests and so on. They didn't care about their promises or the security interests of the Russian Federation. They kept moving and moving until they reached Ukraine, and the then president of Ukraine supported joining the EU, but opposed joining NATO. What did they do? They staged a coup d'etat, bloody unconstitutional one, and the whole West pretended that nothing terrible happened, that this was how it should be. And these absolutely aggressive year-after-year escalating actions led to today's conflict in Ukraine and forced us to start the special military operation trying to end the hostilities already initiated by the Western side and the Kiev regime.
See, so he's tying together what happened that led to the Russian view of why these what we call the Ukraine-Russia war, what he calls a special military operation, started in February 2022. Now, we mock Putin relentlessly in the West because he constantly has said from the beginning, we did not start this war. We were not the aggressor. Obviously, we just mock that and say, well, that's stupid. Obviously, your tanks rolled in February and you know, all these five axes of advance, et cetera. So, we just look at him like he's stupid or something, or that he thinks we're stupid. But that's what it looks like in the West. You have to detach yourself a little bit from that. It's important to know what he means to his audience at home and among the Russian people. And they have a very different view on that. To them, there was nothing controversial what he said at all, or nothing surprising. And he then lays it out here again, which he had been doing. And I wrote this many times. Actually, I wrote this in, I think, 6 and 3 months before the war started. I published in various publications. I wrote again about it afterwards, that there were 15 years before the war started that Putin specifically himself had been warning about the consequences if NATO continued to expand. And then, of course, we know from former NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, who himself openly admitted that Putin told NATO that there would not be a war as long as they took NATO and membership off the table, which is what he'd been saying for the 15 years prior. We could have avoided this whole war. All we had to do is take NATO off the table. We could have had bilateral relations. They could have done all kinds of other things, economic, whatever. Russia was not willing to go to war over those things. They were willing to go to war over NATO on their border, which is what he had said. So now he's just telling the Russian people, he's reminding them again in this context, and that's why it's important. He's saying, listen, all of this stuff this war that we've been fighting for 4.5 years, the active one, happened not just because of the coup in 2014, where we, United States and Western Europe, supported the overthrow of the legally elected government because it was going economically in the direction of Russia. We didn't want that. We wanted it to go in our direction. So we sabotaged it and took something that was inherently going on internally and facilitated that so that we could then put our people in charge. And that's exactly what we did. Now, we just say, oh, it was a color revolution. From our side, that's what it looks like. That's what we've characterized it as. It's just the will of the people. But from the Russian side, they're saying it was a coup. So again, you don't have to agree with them at all, but you have to understand their mentality. This is common among the Russian people. They believe that this was a coup that undermined democratic principles that we claim to support. And so they see, okay, going back even decades before that, with all of these NATO expansions, going back into the mid-1990s, all the way through, all against Russian protestations, never listened to anything. Then the warnings got more strident and the advancement continued on. And so Putin is just saying, hey, this is basically an existential threat from the West. And then now here for 4.5 years, they've been doing everything they can to sabotage our country, to destroy our economy, to defeat our military, and to basically make us knock us from the ranks of the great powers. That's very fertile ground. So the Russian people are already doing this north and south thing that they're saying, yes, we understand the status that you're talking about here. Then he goes on to say, now he brings it up, now that he's kind of set the stage for what brought us to this point, now he's taking a look at the current, he still is calling it the special military operation, even though Peskov here a month or so ago made that one statement, which we highlighted to you, that he said it's no longer an SMO, it's a war, but then nothing happened after that. So we'll see if they return back to that. But for right now, they've gone back again to saying special military operation, SMO, is the way they refer to it here. Putin lays out, just as says as a statement, a matter of fact, that Ukraine, of course, is going to lose. And he says here that they're probably going to lose more territory. But pay attention to what he says here, because it's not just from the Russian side, like you may think.
Among other things, there is the western part of Ukraine, a gift from Joseph Vissarionovich Stalin to Ukraine after the war. Stalin gave these lands to Ukraine, but he gave them as part of a single state. Apparently, it never occurred to him that a situation like today's could arise. Huh. By the way, I am sure that sooner or later Ukraine will lose these western lands and what belonged to Poland, Hungary, and Romania sooner or later. Not tomorrow, perhaps not the day after, a year, 2, 10, or 15. But historically, everything will fall into place. There was only one guarantor of Ukraine's territorial integrity, and that was Russia. But they deemed it necessary, possible, and good for themselves to declare Russia their enemy, and to declare Russians in Ukraine a non-titular nation, which is complete nonsense and absolute rubbish.
So he said a number of things that's important. First of all, he says, yeah, the Ukraine may lose their western territories, not to Russia, but to Poland, Hungary, and Romania. Now, you may be tempted to think in the West that, well, that's stupid. That's never going to happen. But let's take a look at an ethnic map of Ukraine. First of all, you see there on the left side, there's a substantial Polish minority that lives there. There's a Slovak, if you probably can't read the words there. On the far left, there's a small purple area, and then there's a Hungarian in that kind of brownish area, and then there's a Romanian in those blue areas you see down there. This is an ethnic map, remember. Now, the Russian, the primary population ethnically in those areas and in the red there are all where it's predominantly Russian, and all the rest of it there is predominantly Ukraine. So you see ethnically, there are some very clear divisions throughout the country. This is obviously a generalization, but that's the priority and the predominant where these people live in these different oblasts. So you can see why basically what they're all the red on the right is what Putin has called Novorossiya, and he has recently said that Russia will eventually get all of Novorossiya. But he's also saying that, hey, eventually, maybe not this year, maybe not this, you know, coming up in the next few, but maybe even longer. But he said eventually those are going to go back. And I'll just tell you, there has been a lot of talk, not in Russia, but in Poland, in Romania, in Hungary, and apparently even in Slovakia, not as clear about that one, but to say, hey, you know, those are historically our lands. Those are things that have historically belonged to us. And you know that, I mean, looking in the Balkans, that was a big part of what led to the dissolution of Yugoslavia, because you had all these component ethnic portions that were cobbled together inside as a result of World War II, and those national heritages continued, whether it was Serb, Croat, Bosnia-Herzegovina, et cetera. All these Albania, all these had these pulls that pulled apart from it. And there are those, they're in the minority, but there are those in these other bordering countries that say, that's really ours, and those are our people, and, you know, we should probably bring them back in. Right now, that seems like a crazy thing, but historically, that has been a pull, and there are forces inside those countries that want it. And in the event that Russia actually eventually does conquer its Novorossiya and takes all this red, I can assure you there will be people that will be a little bit more interested in saying, well, you know, the resulting country there is so much weaker. The resulting whatever's left of Ukraine, which would include all the areas in yellow, brown, and blue in the left-hand side, but that's making our population, you know, poor and destitute. We need to go help them. You can see where that could happen, because it has in European history so many times. So don't just dismiss that here. But whatever, that's something that somebody else is going to consider. But Putin himself is primarily focused on these are things that continue to happen to us. These continued territorial issues that we're going to solve. And that whole issue about the Novorossiya, of course, he said this is, you know, when he said there at the end, they tried to say that we weren't a nation. After the 2014 time, there were all kinds of laws passed in Ukraine that stripped any Russians of their ability to speak their language, of their religion eventually, and they couldn't even read about their own history, et cetera. So all these legal maneuvers to try to continue to erase Russia, which, of course, only angered them all the more and encouraged them to continue to rebel. That's why we had basically an 8-year civil war along the line of contact between 2014 and 2022. That's why they had this. And now then Russia then said, that's why we're continuing to go forward, because NATO was continuing to press to have Ukraine put all of in its borders. All of that led together. Now then, what Putin is saying, that listen, he answered one of the questions here that we have asked a lot of times. Interestingly, we pointed out, myself, Colonel Doug McGregor, we've many times said we don't really understand why Russia has not put the pedal to the metal and pushed hard to win a military victory. There's been lots of arguments, which I have made, that, you know, militarily there's ways that the Russians, even with all of the drone issues that are on both sides of the line, even with all the support from the United States and from Europe and NATO, et cetera, that there was still a path where they could have. And in the West, people looked at that and they said, well, Russia hasn't because Russia can't. And so we're left to just speculate. Many Russian sources have told me, no, it's an intentional go slow situation, because they'll just slowly strangle Ukraine to death. They'll demilitarize by killing their troops. That's the primary issue. The territory is a secondary one, whatever. But for the first time that I have seen, Putin actually address that to the Russian public and explain why he has chosen the go slow path.
Naturally, over the last 3-4 years, unlike other developed economies of the world, and Russia continues to hold fourth place in the world in purchasing power, parity after China, the USA, and India, we are fourth globally and first in Europe. And in terms of economic growth rates compared to the European Union, we are also ahead. But of course, I would like more, but there are risks of rising inflation and the corresponding consequences. He section. And there are great advantages to the current policy. What does this advantage consist of? Mainly in the stability of the Russian economic and financial system. This is the most important thing. The stability that allows us to resolve issues regarding the development of industry as a whole.
So first of all, just listen, they've been trying through supporting the, you know, 50 nation alliance has been supporting this war against us. They're using Ukraine as the cudgel, as the proxy to kill Russians, etc. They've done everything they can with this, whatever it is today, 21, 22 rounds of sanctions. There's one running through the United States Congress right now. They may add another one here. He said everything they've done is trying to undermine our economy. And what has been the result? We have still weathered that storm, and not only weathered it, we are the number 4 power purchasing parity PPP economy in the world, number 1 in Europe. So despite all the stuff that European countries are doing, Russia has still economically weathered the storm and is above them in all these different PPP categories. That's a fact. You can certainly look that up. That's true. So he's, first of all, saying, hey, we've succeeded about this. Then he tells you the big thing. I'd like to do more, he says, to win this war, but stability of our economic system is the priority. Because he said, look, we've weathered that storm. And if we push harder, that could cause, there's risk, he said. There's risk to doing more. And if we do, maybe we'll win something bigger, but it also might backfire and it might undo a lot of the stability that we've had, because the Russian civil population, the Russian economy is stable. There are problems, that, especially with these long-range strikes coming in, it's caused at least temporary hardships in some areas with gasoline, with diesel, and several other requirements here. Those are generally short-term things that get fixed and then resolved. But the bottom line is that the overall system has remained stable. And yet, so that's kind of where he's been up to this point. And he said, so we really haven't gone any further than that, because I have prioritized stability, and he succeeded. So there are those in the Kremlin, there are those at the front lines, especially, that have been, from what I'm told by Russian sources, genuinely angry at Putin because he hasn't gone harder. And from their view, from their military view, they can win this war. I mean, they can outright achieve a victory on the ground. They're not thinking about the states or any requirements or the economy or anything else. They're just saying, hey, I see them on that side. I see us on this side. I see what our resources and their resources, and they think they can win this. And understandable how soldiers can do that. The head of state, on the other hand, has said, I have higher priorities. I have the entire Russian Federation in mind. And so far, in his view, it's working. And he gives his evidence. They're the number four ranked PPP in the world. Hard to argue with that. But the question is are there more imperatives on the Russian? And especially, this, it's not static on, if I said it's not static on the Russian side, it's also not static on the European and Ukraine side. It started off by telling you Zelensky is trying to expand the war geographically. He's trying to cause Russia to do something inside of Europe that would cause European nations to physically join the war. Now, of course, that's insane. Because if you, the minute that you get a NATO versus Russia war, then nuclear weapons are almost certainly going to be used. So it would be suicidal for Ukraine and probably suicidal for the West, at least in terms of the nature of the world that we know right now. It would probably destroy that world, and God only knows what would come across. Once nuclear weapons are used, everything that we've known is radically changed, and I can't even predict what would come next. But it would be a lot worse than what we have now. That I can say with some confidence. So with Europe also, in addition to whatever Zelensky's doing, of course, Europe is talking about rearm Europe, everybody go up to 5% GDP in their military spending. Germany wants to become the biggest power in the nation, in the continent, the biggest military power. Nearly every other country is going big. UK wants to get bigger. Everybody's pointing to Russia. So he can't just forever go in this status quo, because he can't guarantee that cumulatively over time that the West may grow larger. And then it may be a more difficult task than it is right now. Now, understand, at the moment, Russia has a significant advantage over the totality of NATO in industrial capacity, because they went on something close to a national wartime footing in the later part of 2022. And now that as a result, their industrial capacity is cranking things out at a high pace. They're cranking out a whole series of categories of families of different missiles, obviously the Oreshnik missiles, but other hypersonics. They're now in serial production. And then that's on top of the millions of artillery rounds that they make and all kinds of other ammunition for direct fire weapon systems, et cetera. They have this huge pool of trained manpower, because unlike the Ukraine side, they bring people in, they train them up, they put them into combat for a period of time, and then they demobilize them and send them out and recruit some more and bring them in. And so the overall active force is somewhere around 1.5 million right now, but the trained reserves are actually millions more, because they train them and put them back in. So at any time, they could bring them back onto active duty, as opposed to the Ukraine side. They have such high casualty rates and so few people to draw from that nobody gets demobilized. I don't know if you're aware of that. The Ukraine side doesn't demobilize anyone. Once you get into the army, that's it. You're there until the war's either over or you die. That's it. Or you're so badly wounded you can no longer function in the front line. That's the only thing. So the military capacity for Russia has been growing. But if the European side continues to do what it's saying it's in the process of doing, that balance could start to shift back in the direction of NATO because of all the industrial capacity of all the different nations. That could take a long time. But the issue on Putin's plate right now, when do you prioritize the stability that you have for 4.5 years? And when do you say that the growing change on the other side and Zelensky's attempt to draw other nations in outweighs that risk? Because there's a risk to changing terms and trying to go after a win, and there's a risk to maintaining the status quo. That is a fact. And apparently, Putin is reconsidering that. Because right after in that speech, talking about how stability was the most important thing and that that's what he had prioritized, he says this.
I will reveal a secret. My colleague will not be offended that during the award ceremony, one of the recipients whispered to me, "We will win. We need to be bolder." I really want that. But a question arises, even bolder. And here, just as in the economy, there are risks. The press is losses on the battlefield on our side. Therefore, we will also act carefully here, but persistently and consistently achieving the goals set for the country, and we will achieve them.
Now, I thought it was interesting there, and Gary pointed this out to me before we came on the air here, how giddy and excited Putin looked when he was talking about we need to be bolder. And that's what our troops saw. He was talking about an award he had given to somebody from the SMO. And he said that the soldier leaned over and told him, hey, you know, I like this, but let's be bolder. Which, of course, as I mentioned, is echoed among many of the military class, even at the higher echelons in the Russian society. And you see Putin said, yeah, we do need to be bolder. And he said, yeah, I think we should. He got excited. His face got all animated. You hardly ever see that from Putin. And then it went from jitty to stone cold. And he said, there are risks involved. It could cause more casualties to our troops. But this is something. And then even when he said that, he was interrupted by applause, because many in the Duma and many in the Russian society have been wanting to hear that kind of thing for a long time. Then you saw that cheers at the end. They said, yeah. This is what it is. So he's laying out to them publicly, and you certainly know he's doing it privately. There are risks involved here. Our casualties are going to go up. So he's also telling that to the general public that, hey, if we escalate here, understand it's going to cost us more casualties on our side. He was very, very clear and calculated on that. So what does that mean? Well, you have to take all of that stuff that I've just showed you, and especially that speech right there, and then take a look at this news here. Putin plans to send up to 500,000 more Russians to war, Zelensky warns. And of course, he's just saying stuff that's already in the Russian press. And I'm told from some sources that number is actually closer to 750,000. And again, I mentioned there's several million Russians over the last 4.5 years that have gained combat experience, that were demobilized and can be returned to active service through a mobilization of the reserve, basically. Is what that would be. Wouldn't just be grabbing 500,000 people off the street that never been in military. They would specifically go after people who add military combat experience already. And if you just suddenly bring that on board, and especially if the Russians have nearly everything they've done since that initial attack has been very thoughtfully carried out and resourced. So before you would announce something like this, you would already have the resource so that you can house all those people, equip them, did you have ammunition for them, you have sustainment, etc. All those kinds of things. And yeah, you see, and in fact, go take a look here. Scott Ritter on our show just a couple of days ago talked about Russia will mobilize 500,000 troops. So I strongly recommend you go back and see that. He has a lot more details on that. But you've got to understand here, this could significantly change things. This could happen as soon as September. So barely a month and a half from now, little over a month from now, as a matter of fact. So things could be significantly changing, because understand this, the Russian economy and industrial capacity has been producing missiles and artillery shells and offensive and defensive missiles and artillery shells and other kinds of ammunition at substantial rates, way, way, way above what we've seen on the average daily expenditure, which means that they have probably scattered throughout their country. They probably wouldn't do it in any one spot, but they have storage of a huge amount of offensive and defensive missiles. And if they get into a conflict on the ground and they bring up a large additional number of ground troops, the whole line of contact there is very thin and brittle. And there are places on there, which even I've identified, that are just sparsely held, that if a big push comes into one of those places, drones or no drones, then the Russian forces can break through. And as I've been telling you for the last almost 2 years, and I'm showing you the fortification lines, if you break through some of these fortification lines at the weaker points, instead of spending another year going after Slavyansk and Kramatorsk, the two last fortress cities and all the things that go around that, I would never go there. I would either go somewhere north of that, maybe somewhere between there and Kupiansk, or somewhere south between Zaporizhia and the southern part of the Slavyansk area, where there is less fortifications. Once you punch through the back, you don't have to go through their biggest one. You'll just bypass it and go right behind it. I've been puzzled why they haven't. Apparently, Vladimir Putin gave us the answer today, because he has prioritized something different. But now, because the Ukraine and the European side and American side is not static, it is changing. And so now apparently he's calculating he also has to change. This could dramatically change everything, because maybe Russia is not going to first strike at NATO targets. Maybe they're first going to say, we're going to clean up here and go back and take all of Novorossiya. That's all the way up to the Dnieper River, but obviously beyond it, completely taking the Odessa in the south, Kharkiv in the north, and some even suggest all the way, not just to this red map, but all the way to Kiev too. Once things start falling apart, everything becomes possible. Right now, no one's thinking that's even possible because they're looking at Slaviansk and Kramatorsk and just saying it'd probably take Russia, based on the last 4 years, it'd take another year of concerted effort to get that. If that's what they were trying to do, that's probably a good, accurate assessment. If Russia continued to do the same things it has done up to this point, that's probably how it would go. But there's evidence that they're not going to do what they have been doing, and they certainly aren't going to do the highest cost operation to take those fortress cities head on at great cost and a lot of time, which would continue to give time for Zelensky to try to expand the war and for Europe to continue to rearm. So I think that the calculations may lead Russia to finally attempt what they haven't even done really since the opening stage of the war, which is to engage a large-scale offensive operation designed to achieve a decisive outcome this time, unlike the first one. Their decisive outcome the first time was to try to compel a diplomatic outcome in a deal, which nearly worked in Istanbul. But once the Istanbul fell apart, now that they're exposed because they didn't have the manpower to achieve a military defeat, now that seems to be changed. So we are going to be keeping a close eye on this, especially heading into the fall here. And we'll be seeing what Russia's going to do. We'll keep on the headlines here. We'll keep on any statements that come out here. But just understand, things could be significantly changing just in the next few months heading into the fall and winter of this year. Thanks very much, folks. Look forward to seeing you here just at 1 o'clock today. Colonel McGregor will be back on, always one of our show favorites here. He's going to be talking a little bit about some of this Russia stuff, but also about a number of developments in the Iran war and what may be coming next. Always wanted to pay attention to what he has to say on that. And then we have Robert Barnes, who is going to be from the 1776 law firm, who is also one of our growing favorites here on the show. He's going to be on at 2 p.m. today, right after that. So we will see you then on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. You know, I don't try to talk you into buying gold or tell you how to run your stock portfolio, but there is a way you can help us. Subscribe, hit that like button, and share this with somebody you love.